Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah.
Did you hear that?
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical. When I came out here, I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
Well, I landed on the ground, kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. This got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Animus knows what you think I've seen. Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side of his knee, and he was talking to Marcus and Joe. Where the party they gonna have? Out in the St. John's walls. Sasquatch doing a brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Descarty. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Tom won't be with us tonight. He's out in the business world trying to make everything all right for us to go on another expedition. While it's just me, let me remind you about all the movies that we have out, everything we have at the Bigfoot store. Go online and look. You've got hats, floor mats, got sweatshirts, we got T-shirts, we got everything Bigfoot. And y'all need to get on there and buy, buy, buy. So far, we looks like we're going to have a good show. I think Leo's been having a little bit trouble calling in on us. Let me give him a shot here.
Hey, Rock, you can hear me?
Is that you, Leo?
That's me all day long.
I can just barely hear you, friend.
All right, hold on just a second. Is this better?
Oh, that's so much better. I can't even tell you. How are you doing?
There we go. Doing good, doing good. Hello, Bigfoot world. This is Leo the Bigfoot Hunter. Who brought you? Hey, how's everybody doing at that Bigfoot world? How you doing, Rock?
I'm doing great. Doing great indeed.
Good.
We won't have the Swede on tonight. He's just got his darling spouse out of the hospital, and so he's tied up trying to make her well. And like I say, Tom is out and about trying to get everything set up so we can do us a big expedition next month. But Leo's got us some guests, and so y'all won't have to listen to me. Y'all can listen to Leo and these people. I will throw in a commercial every now and then, though. Go ahead, Leo.
Again, hello, Bigfoot world. This is yours truly, Leo the Bigfoot Hunter, with you tonight. As you heard, our host and godfather, he's out doing a little business for searching for Bigfoot. So, godfather, wherever you are, who brought you? And kudos to you, sir. Also, we have our good friend Father Ray that's on the show tonight. And Father Ray, sir, we ask that when we get off the show, you say a little prayers for my man Swede and his family. But tonight, folks, we got two people on the show, very interesting people. They got some very extraordinary stories that some might care to listen to. Our first guest on the show is Miss Elizabeth. Do you have her out there, Rocky?
Yes, I do.
I'm here.
Hello, Miss Elizabeth.
Hello, you fellas.
How are you? How are you this evening?
I'm
good.
Doing just fine in steamy Arizona. It's hot as can be.
Ooh.
How hot
what
is it
part
out there,
of Arizona?
Elizabeth?
I'm actually currently in Cave Creek, which is on the northern part of the Phoenix City Basin city limits. But it's been
I spent 3 years in the Marines in Yuma, Arizona. It's hot out there.
Yeah.
I can bet. How hot is it now, Miss Elizabeth?
I believe it's only in the 90s today. It's been pretty nice, actually. We actually had a little bit of rain and some clouds come over for a few days and let things cool off a bit.
Good, 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 good.
Yeah.
Good, good, good. Well, Miss Elizabeth, if you would, tell us a little bit about yourself. And tell us a little bit where you're originally from. And we'll go right into the story that you have to tell us of some of the encounters that you've had. I think it was in New Mexico.
Actually, I'll go in. I was born and raised in the suburbs of Salt Lake City, Utah. And then I spent a decade in Florida in the southern part, Fort Lauderdale. And then I moved to Arizona in 99 and been in the Phoenix area. Then I moved to the White Mountains, Greer, Sholo, Pine Top area, up there in 2014 and spent 5 years there. And then I just moved back to Cave Creek to be closer to my family and my daughter and my grandkids in this year. So I'm back in Cave Creek now. But that's how I met Father Ray, is living up there in that area. And that's where I did most of my my own personal investigations and experiences and stuff with the subject.
Okay, okay. Well, you know a good man when you know Father Ray. I can tell you that now. You know, great man.
He is quite a sweetheart.
But if you would, Miss Elizabeth, tell us about what I want to do. I want to bring it up to the present and then bring it back to when you had your first encounter. So can you tell us your most recent encounter or most recent enactment that you had with these creatures? You can give us a general area of where you had this encounter.
All of my my research took place in the White Mountains in New Mexico and in Arizona. That region borders the border. It's basically central state, but it borders both sides in there. It's rather remote, a lot of national forest, a lot of Indian reservation, and the towns that are in the area are rather small. So there's not a lot of water in this parts of the area. So there's a lot of water up in that area, which brings a lot of recreation and fishermen and stuff. It's highly used in the summertime, but in the wintertime it's not so much. So when I moved up there, my last experience was my last experience. And it was, I'd probably be better to start from the beginning than it would be from the end and back up, actually.
Okay.
I'm basically a rock hound. So on my days off when I was living here in Phoenix, I would look at the Atlas map and look at where all the springs were and all the river and the water and spend the weekends going to those locations if I was accessible. And during that time, I would look for Indian artifacts, minerals, and any type of just neat things out there. And I noticed before I was even aware of really even looking into the topic that occasionally in some of these locations, you'd get the sycamores and the cottonwoods. But I would occasionally see the sycamores with formations where the trees were put in formations that I just sat there and would stare at them and try to imagine how many guys and trucks and ropes were able to get that up there like that.
Now, were these large trees? Were these real large trees that was up there?
Very, very high. Yeah, higher than you could possibly, big, big ones. So there was one that I noticed. I just sat there all day trying to figure out how that could ever possibly happen by nature. And there was just, there was just no way. And so at that point, I didn't connect it to Bigfoot or Sasquatch, but I just knew that something was just not right about that. And so a couple years goes by, and I moved up to the White Mountains, and there we're in a lot of pines. So there's a lot more material. And that's when I was still rock hounding. There's all the crystals and agates and things, and I would follow the waterways and do all that. And I started noticing the tree structures and how there was a consistent pattern to them and how they were definitely manipulated. And so with that is really what opened me up to the idea of Sasquatch. Not that I never doubted it. I just didn't really care at that point. I spent a lot of time in nature, and I grew up around horses. And I just being a female, I grew up always being a weak species, a weaker species. So I think women just tend to have less fear in some regards because we've already had to learn how to utilize different parts of, intuition or rationality or whatever it is to be savvy, because we've never been a strong species. So I think with that and my background, the idea of there being a large animal out there that I might not necessarily know about wasn't fearful to me, because I've already been around draft horses as a kid. And, to me, it just something like I didn't have that fear factor to begin with. So I think that opened up the door for me to go out alone like I was and go do more exploring and stuff like that. Do you want me just to continue on, or you want to add?
Yes, ma'am. If you go ahead and I want you to go ahead and just jump right into your encounters. That's the intriguing thing that everybody out there wants to know.
So when I started realizing the tree structures, I started looking into the community of the Bigfoot world, and I was finding other videos, because at that time, that's when more people were posting the same structures and were linking it together. And at that point, I thought that really made a lot of sense. This totally explains what I'm observing. So at that point, I was able to go out with more of an education about what the potential of the situation was and be able to be a little more creative with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I learned to follow their symbols and their tree structures and stuff and follow their trail systems. And I would just go from one to the other to the other, and it would take me to springs that really weren't always on the map, or maybe were seasonal. It would take me to berry bushes, patches that were most locals didn't know about, so they were there were still berries on them. And I noticed too that their trail systems would cut off corners, like the game trails would always want to take the easiest route. Well, their trail systems always didn't take the easiest route. And so I realized that there was like a strategic intelligence there, because if your normal animals want to waste the least amount of energy as possible.
Right.
When you have something that wants to exceed energy, then there must be some reason behind that. So I started realizing that there was that intelligence in regards to the trail system. So then I decided that I really wasn't getting any much further with just following their markers. So I decided to do an experiment where one of the markers that was in a burned area, and so it was a teepee type style, and so it was maybe a 10-minute drive from where I lived, and I went there, and I put in a stick lift in the center of it at the bottom in the ground, and the first stick lift I did was a 7-pointed star stick lift, And so I set it there in the middle and I left, and I came back the following week to check on it, and the glyph had been completely dismantled. Like, I couldn't even see that it had ever been there. So I figured, okay, well, something, I don't see it, so let me do a different glyph of a different style. So at that point, I did an arched up glyph, kind of like a mini teepee, but more of a bow to it, so I could make sure that it wouldn't, like, I would know for sure where it was. Because you start to figure, now, where did I really? No, it was there. So anyway, so I did a different structure of it, and I came back the following week to check on it, and it was dismantled as well. So at that point, I decided to do something a little bit more simplistic, and I picked up four sticks that were of the same size. The bark was removed, the same thickness, and laid them right next to each other really tight, like a little mini bridge, and I pressed them down into the moss really so it was flush, so that if an animal walked over it, it wasn't going to really do anything to disturb it. I wanted to make sure it was solid. Mm-hmm. So when I came back the following week, those sticks were actually clustered up into a cluster and had another stick that had a natural bow in it that was pressed into, and another stick that wove through them to secure them in that and was set just outside the teepee. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I realized that I don't know if it was the stick formation that I used meant something, or if they were just acknowledging the fact that I was doing it and was basically saying, we understand that you're doing this, but don't put it in our teepee. I have no idea. I'm just speculating.
Now, did you see any footprints or anything, any kind of disturbance?
The terrain in the mountainous area there is primarily basalt, so all it is lava. So you've got cinder and lava with greenery and vegetation coming through it. It doesn't leave prints at all. It's mm-hmm. like, unless you get into an area where there's, you know, some ability for the water to pool or something like that during the rain, but the terrain isn't really good for footprints. So up there, I haven't actually seen any footprints, but I did find scats. I did find areas where you could obviously tell that, you know, something large had been resting in there. Areas that were clean and cleared with tons of vegetation and debris around them that you could tell that something. So So after I had the communication exchange with the stick lift, I pretty much ended it at that, because I wasn't really clear what that meant, and I just kind of, all I really wanted to do is just see if I could get a reaction of some kind, that I could confirm that it was a reaction, and I did. So at that point, I stopped that experiment and started doing more of just following their trail systems, and I would come into more of the jungle, what we call jungle gyms or whatever. Some of them are really elaborate and very large, and some of them were small and intricate. Mm-hmm. And then I started noticing even more, like, really, really subtle stick arrangements, you know, very small, very subtle. So I started realizing that, you know, there was more to see than what you saw originally. You see the big stuff, and then when you start looking and you start seeing the small stuff, and then you start realizing that there's definitely a language, there's a communication, there's something going on, and why they do what they do and where they do it and what it means. And you can also tell where some stuff has been sitting there for a long time and some stuff has been put there new. So it's almost like a seasonal thing, you know, or whatever. But so at that point, I also, through the whole thing with the following the trail system and having the interaction on that level, I didn't ever really try to pursue to see them, because I felt like if they wanted me to see them, that they would have plenty of opportunity to make themselves seen. Mm-hmm. And so I realized that wasn't going to be something that I would try to. I just felt like just being around in their space, and I was always there in the daytime. I wouldn't try to go at nighttime. I just lived so close, there wasn't really a need to go there and camp at night. And I didn't really want to do that being alone and whatnot. So with that whole thing. And so I started looking at the situation as like, of them as living as a sentient being, live in a community, and how it would be from their perspective trying to coexist with someone like us, a species like us, and how they would see the perspective and what would motivate them and what wouldn't motivate them. And so when I started looking at it from that perspective, I was able to, I feel like get a closer, I felt like the closest communication I had with them is when I was in this little basin, and it was marsh grass, and there was some spring running through it. So there was a big matted down patch. Sometimes the elk will lay in it when it's real hot up there in the summertime because they've got water underneath them. But this patch looked like something very large, several very large things had smashed down a whole big section of this marsh grass. And I was debating if I was going to cross the marsh and get my feet wet or if I was going to track around it and go up the ridge that I was planning to go that was in front of me. And when I was going to cross through the marsh, I had a woodpecker knock to the right of me first and another one right after to the left of me. But the pecking, the rap-tap-tap, wasn't the normal traditional, because I like music and I dance, and so you just had that rhythm base. To me, it just set off an alarm that thought maybe, you know, what this is. So anyway, this one tapped up a woodpecker. The one to the left of me did the woodpecker. And so me, as a curiosity, I clapped my hands and tried to mimic their same repetition. So I would clap my hands, rap a tap, 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 and try to mimic that one. This one to my right would rap off again. The one to my left would rap off again, and then I would rap off again, and we would exchange this kind of like jam session. And this continued for probably like 2 minutes. I was just wanted to keep it going because I thought it was just so much fun that they were engaging with me like this. So then above them on the top ridge, a big loud one-time squirrel alert just blasted off. And at that point, all the rap stopped. Everything stopped. And I knew at that point that the exchange was like had to end right there. Mm-hmm. And then it dawned on me that to them, communicating with us puts them at risk. To us, communicating with them doesn't seem that dangerous because our system doesn't acknowledge them. So I realized that by trying to lure them into communicating with me could actually cause them problems within their own group, their own system.
How recent was this encounter that you've had with these creatures?
Yeah, the rap, tap, tap, that was last summer.
Okay.
And
we know the White Mountains, we know that probably some of that area is inhabited by Native Americans. Have you ever spoke to any Native Americans and told them about your experiences and seen what their feedback was in reference to these creatures?
You know, actually, there's a large portion of the Native population there. But the Apache and the Navajo, they're not really into communicating very deeply or eye contact or much with people outside their family dynamic. You know, if they don't live on the res, then they do, because they're usually working within our system and stuff like that. But if they're on the res, it's just part of their culture that they're not very vocal about sharing stuff like that. So I didn't talk to them. But I will say that I tried to engage people within my own community about what I was finding to try to draw on some curiosity. There's a large Forest Service industry there. And it was very difficult because as much as I could show pictures and even take people to these locations to try and show them, to engage some more enthusiasm from other people to want to do this with me, there wasn't the ability for them, whether the Forest Service, you know, staff, whether they could believe me, but they couldn't because of their job and what would happen, or the ones that I would try to explain to, maybe they just didn't matter to them. They just didn't want to admit it, and they didn't want to go into it. So it was a very – it couldn't go really far with bringing other people on board with it.
Right.
And I'm not a techie person. I'm very, like, dyslexic. So when it comes to nature and landscape, I have a photographic memory. But when it comes to, like, numbers and systems and how to navigate computers and stuff, so I don't have a presence on social media. I don't have a presence on – to share anything. This is the first time I've shared anything about what I've done. So,
right. Well, you know, you have a very, very, very extraordinary witness account. A lot of people don't even, they really don't even get that close to start getting any knocks or any kind of communications with these creatures. But you've had a very, very extraordinary type of experience and encounter with these creatures. And hopefully someday you'll get that money shot, you get that picture of the creature. Well, we appreciate you coming on the show, though. We really do. And sharing it with us.
I'll say one quick thing. I think the only reason why I've had the experiences that I've had with them is because they saw me on a regular basis. They got familiar with me, and I think that's the only reason.
Well, you know, we might have to put you on the team because you might be the one to bring one of these creatures into us so we can actually get that money, child.
Oh, there you go. That'd be wonderful.
Well, I appreciate you having you on the show. What we're going to do, you please remain on the show.
Okay.
Folks, let me tell you something real quick before Rocky takes us to a commercial break. Listen, listen, listen. Go to Tubit TV, Tubit TV, that's TUBIT TV.com, and you can see Brutal Bigfoot by our host and renowned researcher, Tom Biscardi, the godfather of Bigfoot. Go on Tubit TV and you can watch Brutal Bigfoot for free. Please, folks, go on and check it out. We're also going to have some of our other movies on there, so you get a chance. Go on and check it out. It's Tubit TV, TUBITV.com. Rocky, do me a favor, man. If you go ahead and take us to a commercial, we come back. People, we got a good story to tell you. We're going to let our friend, Mr. Paul, tell you the story. These creatures are migrating in the Midwest. They are moving all around. I'm telling you, the fall is coming. It is getting cool, and these creatures are coming out. So we got a young man that's going to be on the show in just a few minutes. He got a very extraordinary story to tell us right now. Rock, if you would, go ahead and take us to a commercial break.
1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I got to tell you, that's the day I thought I was going to challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks on the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah.
Did you hear that? He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Hey, Rock.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, go to www.searchingforbigfoot.com. Go to the store and look at all the neat merchandise, and give us a call and order. Go ahead, Leo.
Also, folks, if you got any kind of questions that you want to present to us or the Godfather, to anybody on the show, you can send your questions to Bigfoot, B-I-G-F-O-O-T, underscore, Hunter, the number 5, at protonmail.com. That's Bigfoot, underscore, Hunter, 5, at proton, P-R-O-T-O-N, mail.com. And give us your feedback and give us any kind of questions that you have for us. Also, if you have any sightings, you can shoot them to that email address as well, and we'll do what we can to get you on the show so you can share your eyewitness account of these creatures as well. You know, that's what we want to do. We want to get you, the listeners out there who are having these encounters, so we can really, really, really let the world know what's going on with these creatures. Coming on the show right now, folks, we have Paul. He's out of Ohio. And he has a very, very extraordinary story as well, just like Miss Elizabeth from out of Ohio. This was a recent encounter. Paul, you out there?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Hey, Paul, if you would, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, my friend.
Yeah. So right now I'm living in the southeastern Ohio area. Originally I'm from Denver, Colorado. I moved here about 12 years ago. Ohio is really known for wildlife and stuff, so my passions are like hunting, fly fishing, anything outdoors I'm super, super into.
Okay. If you would, go ahead and tell us about this recent encounter that you had. And folks, before I get into that recent encounter, I want to tell you, Paul sent some very extraordinary pictures and video. He sent some very, very amazing video that we're going to put on the Searching for Bigfoot website. And also, we're going to put on my Facebook page. You can go to my Facebook page as well at the BCB. Go to the BCB Facebook page, Brothers Chasing Bigfoot. And I'm going to put his pictures and as well as his video on the Facebook page. And I'm telling you, these are some amazing pictures. It blew me out of my mind when I seen it. Paul, if you would, tell us about the encounter that you just recently had and tell us, you know, exactly storybook what happened.
Yeah, man, you just want me to start from the beginning?
Yes, sir.
Cool. So me and my friends, we had planned we were going to meet in a location at 8 a.m. and then we were going to walk through a field and go to a creek. We were going to fish that creek for a few hours. So we all met up to the location. I think it was around 7:50 a.m. We got there, and then we're walking through the field, and we have to cross over a road. So we go over the guardrail, and I look out into the field, and it's still, you know, it's really foggy and everything. So I look out into the field, and one of my friends is like, "Oh, dude, look at that deer." So immediately I look out, and this thing, it's a large black figure. It's probably standing about 30 yards from the tree line, and I just catch a glimpse of it, and it turns, and it, like I said, it was probably about 30 yards, and man, it cleared that like nothing. So I was like, holy crap, dude, like, that must have been a big buck. Like, I'm surprised that they're moving this early, because this was just this previous Sunday, so I'm surprised they're moving like that this early. So we walked down there, we walked to the field, we're looking for deer tracks, just trying to see how big this thing actually was, any scratch marks on trees. We didn't really see anything. So as we pull in, we're going through this clearing, and then there's like this little like ATV trail. And as we're walking down the ATV trail, we go into a bean field, and Ohio is like known for beans and corn. So we walk into the bean field, and we see these paths going through the beans. They look like they've been freshly trampled. So we're like, follow it down. We don't really see anything. We're like, that buck must have moved. So we go into the creek. And the first thing I hear, we walk into the creek, we're probably about 5 minutes down, probably about 10 minutes away from where we were going to stop and fish for a few hours. And all of a sudden I just hear these like branches snapping and, pretty loud, like branches snapping, like it sounded like large branches. So, in one of the videos, you can just barely hear a branch snapping, and then you can hear one louder. And then as we're moving forward, like, what the heck was that? So we start hearing these knocks, knocks on what it sounds like somebody's hitting a tree with like a large, like, log or something. So we're like, we start recording, you know, we're moving through, we're like, dude, what is this? You know, like this is crazy. Like, I've never seen something like that. I've never heard anything like this before. So, we get about 20 yards from the spot we were going to stop. There's this down tree. And as I'm walking toward the tree, immediately I just like, this scent hits me. It was almost like raw sewage. It was probably one of the nastiest things I smelled in my life, in all honesty. So it hits me. I'm like, dude, what is that smell? Like, this is going to get weird. And both my friends are pointing at this tent. This is when the video starts. So you can see me climbing over the tree. And as I'm looking around the tree, you know, the creek that we were in, it bends. It bends pretty sharply. So as I'm going over the tree, I see this massive, like dark brown figure. Huge, like, I can't even, like, conservatively, I would probably say this thing was probably 7.5 feet tall. Massive, and at this point, it was squatted over. I couldn't tell. It looked like it appeared as though its hands were cupping water, like it was drinking, or it could have just been peering around the corner. Whatever it was. So you can see this in the video. I'm like, one of my friends is like, what is that? So we start running. I'm like yelling, like, run, run, run as loud as I can. So we're moving, and we can hear this thing. You can hear this thing in the first video. You can hear it yell very faintly. It wasn't more of like a yell. It was more of like a kind of like a grunt or growl almost. So we're running, and we clear probably running for a couple of minutes. We run through the field that we originally came in, and we're probably about 300 yards away from the edge of the creek, or from the entrance of the creek where we went in. So we turn around. My friends are still recording at this point. And we look around, and this thing emerges from the tree lines, and this is whenever you can hear the howls in the video and the yells. So at first we hear a howl, and we're like, what the heck, dude? Like, this is crazy. And then the creature, I actually lost my shoes because we were running. And you can see the creature squat down, like, around the same area where I lost one of my shoes.
Right.
One of the other shoe I lost earlier. You can see the creature squat down in the video, and then you can see it come back up. And it's just we're 300 or 400 yards away, and you can see this thing clearly.
Well, let me ask you this, Paul. At any time, was the creature aggressive to you, or did the creature show any sign of aggression by shaking his hands or throwing any objects at you guys while you were out there?
Whenever we first started hearing the branches snapping at a knock. It sounded like objects could have been getting through. I have no idea. I can't answer that question 100%. But it could have been very well possible. Signs of aggression, though, really the only thing that stood out as aggressive to me was this creature trying to get us out of wherever it was. It wasn't. I'm sure this thing wanted to get its hands on one of us. It very well could have.
Ohio is a very, very hot spot for these creatures. If you look
right.
at any kind of research or data in any kind of Bigfoot organization, you look at there's a lot of clusters in Ohio with these creatures mm-hmm. migrating. Now, this particular area where you were, have you ever been in this area before, or do you know the history behind the area where you were doing this encounter?
I drove to the spot we were all going to meet up, and it took me probably less than 5 minutes to get there. And I've been fishing around where I live. I've been fishing it for years. Like, I know it like the back of my hand. I've been in the backwoods of Ohio, running through lakes and rivers, streams there. And, sometimes, you'll get the occasional, coyote will run in front of you or a big deer will run in front of you, but this is nothing like that, man. Nothing like anything I've ever seen. It's sending chills down my back right now, just how crazy this actually was.
And like I said, the video is a very amazing video from what I've seen. We're going to bring our good friend Rocky in. Rocky, what do you think about this, man? Tell me what you think.
Well, I'm still mulling over a lot of what Elizabeth said. When you saw the creature, what did you get any... like a good facial close-up or anything like that?
Like I said, the person who was recording the video, they were a couple feet behind me, and the creek that we were in, it bends very sharply. So whenever I went just peering over the tree that we had to climb over, I could see clearly around the corner, but the people behind me could not, just as an angle. And I was probably within 20 to 30 feet of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. And you know, Rock, I don't know, have you seen the video yet, Rock? Have you seen the video here?
No,
audio?
I haven't.
Oh, man, it's crazy, man, because when you look at it throughout the field where he is, to give you like a image, the field where he is like the vegetation is growing real high. And you can see it as Paul is running away, getting away from him. You can see the relationship between Paul and this vegetation. But you can see this creature from a distance, and you can almost you can put two and two together and see his torso begins and where he begins at the edge of the field, because you can see it. He turns, he looks, and he goes back up into the wooded area. But I'm telling you, it's a very amazing video, man. I was struck by what I seen, and like I said, that's why I'm gonna see to it that we get it put on the on my Facebook page, BCB, and also get put on the Searching for Bigfoot. So, Rock, I'm gonna send it to you so you can see it. And let me ask you this, Paul.
Okay.
Have you been back out to the area since this recent encounter?
No, I have not been back there. I'm a little afraid to go back there, I'm gonna be honest.
Well,
that's not bad thinking.
Yeah. That's true. That's typical of most people when they have a true encounter. The first thing you ask them, are you going back? And most of them say, hell no. Not no, but hell no. So I mean, you like you had one of many amazing encounters that some people don't have, and just the same thing as Miss Elizabeth, you know, some of the encounters, and I always tell people when you go out to look for these creatures, the searching for Bigfoot. How many times we've been out rock and we've never heard anything, never seen anything, you know, nothing's happened.
Mostly nothing happens. Occasionally, we get surprised. We were in Fred, Texas, I think. We were in Texas at the time. We had a news crew with us, and a woman, asked Tommy if he did the howls and all that. Of course, she had seen Bobo on Finding Bigfoot, not Finding Bigfoot, but anyhow, so he let loose with a yell. We stood there for a couple of minutes, and he did it again. And that time, we got an answer. Well, where we were, there was nobody around for miles. The news crew got it on. Got the audio of it and played it for the people there in Texas the next night. Most Bigfoot hunting is walking through hot or cold woods, getting eat up by mosquitoes and ticks and chiggers, all of that kind of stuff, but all the misery you go through, just anything that you get, just, I mean, it seems pretty major to us.
Yeah.
And, we've had a lot of people come on that talk about, we had one guy a few years ago, and, you know, he was one of those, we saw it every day, and, you know, it's, but, you know, everybody that we know, Tom's been doing this since 1967. Mm-hmm. He's had 7 sightings.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing this since, I don't know what year I started up with Tom, but I've had exactly one sighting. I've been there in the area when other people have seen it. But myself, you know, it just happened one time.
Yeah.
But I'm out there trying to see to it, hoping that it happens again.
Yeah. Well, you know, what most folks fail to realize when you're out doing this research, the biggest key what you do is you sit back and see what happened. You don't ask for anything to happen. You don't make anything happen. You just sit back and see what does happen, you know. And what makes a lot of Bigfoot sightings believable by a lot of people, especially people that does this research like we do, you know, on a daily basis, is when you see the people that say, I had that one sighting and I was in this particular area and this took place, you know, you really got to watch out for the folks out there when they start talking about, yo, I see, like Rocky just alluded to, I see Bigfoot every day. I see Bigfoot every week. He comes up to my mailbox and get my mail and bring it to the damn house. You know, and he sorts the mail out. When you start getting crap like that, those are people that you steer away from. And I like having genuine people on our show, such as Elizabeth. You know, she didn't have some off-the-wall telepathic, as my friend Rocky, my co-host Rocky, hates, you know, some telepathic story of Bigfoot, you know, floated above the water or some crap like that. You know, she told you about these creatures trying to make their way in to communicate. And then you have my good friend Paul on here, who was just out fishing and seeing this creature. And like I say, in the video, I can tell it's genuine because at one time I could have sworn I heard Paul might have had to go back home and change his underwear because of what he's seen. I can tell in his voice.
What?
What's
that?
You know
what, Leo? Why don't we just open it up so that, you know, Doyle might have some questions. All right.
Yeah, we got Father Ray out there.
There's,
Father Ray, you out there?
Yeah, there's Miss Elizabeth.
Miss Elizabeth, come on in.
There's
Yeah. Hello, Father Ray.
I'm here. If there is anything bothering her, you know, maybe you can pray for her tonight as well.
Yes.
Thank you. Hey, Dole.
Father Ray, are you there?
Yes, Father Ray is here. Father Ray's here.
I'm not Catholic, Father Ray, but I am impressed with the Catholic religion. I hold it holy to me. But
yes.
I'm a Baptist, which means that I'm a Baptist and a Pentecostal. And
okay.
Sometimes we'll grab a snake up and handle it, you know, but that's part of our religion.
Yes. From Mark's gospel.
Hey, Dole.
Yo.
Who brought you?
No, I'm the hillbilly here, big boy.
Hey, this is Leo. And it's Leo. Hey, Dole, since we got you on the show, anything going on out there in old Kentucky, the bluegrass state?
Oh, yeah.
Tell us what's going on, Dole.
Buddy, I'm getting people every day of the week just are calling me because I put my number on the line. I'll put it on the line tonight again. 606-246-1989.
Say it again, Dole. Folks listening up out there, say it again, Dole.
606-246-1989. If you call that number and I'm within 1,000 miles of you, I guess, I will come to you and I'll investigate your Bigfoot sighting.
There you go, folks. You heard that. If you got a sighting, I'm a good friend, Dole.
Now, here's
Dole,
the thing about it. So Elizabeth, she talked about her sticks and everything. Now, we went to, on our one expedition, that we went to Paris, Texas. And one thing I noticed that nobody else did until I caught it was there were 3 pronged leaves. Okay? And they were put on little branches of trees. And every time you looked at that branch of trees, it would lead to a path. You would have to have an opposable thumb to do that. So what ended up happening was we followed these paths, and whenever we did, we found dumps of fish, you know, that were just eating off the carcass. And
thanks, buddy.
Like feeding groups. It was.
Now, was it in piles, Dole, or how was it? Was it in piles, or how was it?
There would be like 10 fish that would have been just.
Hey,
right
Leo,
off
is that
bone.
You?
That's Leo.
Hello?
Leo.
Yes.
It's the Godfather. How are you?
Godfather. Hey, folks. Illustrious host and
Godfather's own. Hey, Big Tom, Godfather.
Listen, how's the show going tonight?
The show is going great. I'm sure you've been listening well.
Well, I'm here at a party, believe it or not, a birthday party, and with all these beautiful people, and they've been listening too, okay? And they all said, geez, we got to get in on this and tell everybody how wonderful. There's some questions, Leo.
Yes, sir.
Answer it, but you're there from North Carolina, and Rocky's there from Arkansas, and who is and what's his name there from Kentucky or Tennessee? Is that Doyle?
We got Doyle.
Yeah.
Kentucky.
All right, son. Listen, hold on. I got a guy now, Corey. Right.
Right.
Corey's going to ask you a question. About Bigfoot. Here it goes.
This is Corey. Now you may have already covered this tonight, but we're concerned about the wildfire and how Bigfoot may have been affected by it. We're a few of our friends and a few of the people sitting at the table with us tonight were up in Northern California and saw relatively firsthand some of the smoke and some of the destruction. We're concerned about how Bigfoot may have been affected. Do you have any news, updates, reports from the field?
Well, we haven't had any news yet, but I can tell you now. As the Godfather taught us, these creatures will migrate, and they're probably moving north away from the fires. But we haven't had any kind of information
No.
that anybody had any contact with these creatures during this wildfires.
This is Bill from Kentucky, and I can tell you right now that I've got a nephew that owns a farm, a goat farm, in Northern California.
Uh-huh.
He's a Bigfooter, and he says that those wildfires that destroyed cities and everything else drove the Bigfoot out of there, and they come south. And that's where everybody gets confused whenever they go to, like, places like Alabama, Florida, and places like that. Then everybody thinks, well, and they start having Bigfoot sightings. But everybody doesn't understand that these things are migrating to survive.
Correct. Correct.
I would think so.
Yep.
Correct.
That's
correct.
So they know the score. They know the land better than any of us do.
Oh yeah. When you look at these creatures, are out in the wilderness 24/7. So they know the lay of the land better than we do. So you know they're very intelligent. So when the fires start, these creatures start migrating and moving away, and that's where you start tending to see a lot of your Bigfoot sightings going up in the northern borders, like in Canada, and then some of the northern states, you know, that borders Canada. So, you know, I would think that these creatures are migrating away from the forest fires.
Right.
Right. They're migrating north and south. But they're going south because they like the warm weather, and there's plentiful, bountiful nutrition for them here in the south.
Right.
Yeah, do they tend to follow the forest line to keep under the canopy, or do they ever hit the open areas?
Well, my take on that is when you see a Bigfoot to take open area, that's by mistake. He's taking a chance to cross the road. Most of the time when you see a Bigfoot that may cross the road in a certain area that's wide open, generally these creatures are going to try to stay camouflaged.
I can tell you right now, this is what we've proven, and we've showed it on national TV. We've shown it on national TV, TJ and I have, that when these animals migrate south, they use the tunnels of all the old coal mines in, like, West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee. They use those. Old coal mines to. I mean, boy, I've got video of Tommy going into an auger hole and, you know, trying to find a Bigfoot. And they use those caves and they use those coal mines to stay hidden until they can get back down south.
Could have done better.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for that.
Yes, sir. Godfather, I got a question for you.
All right, go ahead.
I got a quiz question.
All right.
Tell me where I can go and see Brutal Bigfoot for free. I'm going to see if you're going to get this answer correct.
I love it.
I'm going to see if you can get it correct.
Go to, I was going to say Zulu. Because, you know, that's...
The movie?
Well, that's for apartments, right?
Yeah, that's Zillow. So, no, this is so true. Now, you guys got to forgive me because I've had too much to drink, but why don't you make an announcement to everybody? We just announced this last week on the show. On one of our latest movies, you can see for free. And all you have to go
TV.
To is...
TubeTV.
TubeTV.com. You go to TubeTV.
Right.
Is it TUBI?
It's TUBITV.com. And you can watch this video for free.
TUBITV. Yeah.
TV.
Okay. Great.
TubeTV.
That is fantastic. And thank you so much for reminding me, man. And this is good. Yeah, all these people.
Hey, Leo, this is Paul.
So I told them that we're going on expedition next month in October.
Right.
And they all said, can we go? Can we go too? So we'll see.
Okay. Paul, you got a question out there, Paul?
Yes, sir. So I just have a question. So obviously you guys are the experts. Like before this encounter, I'd done no research on this kind of thing, you know. I was very uneducated. So I just have a question. So whenever we're talking about migratory patterns, do you believe that these creatures' migratory patterns are more related to climate change or more related to where the food is available? Because I would assume with how big these creatures are believed to be, that they would need a massive amount of land to sustain the caloric intake that's necessary for a 8 foot, 600, 700 pound creature. So how do their migratory patterns relate to that?
Okay, well, and you know what? That's probably one of the best questions I've heard, all right?
Mm-hmm.
But remember one thing. These creatures, I believe, are a derivative of the Yeti from the Himalayas, and they came over through the land bridge linking Siberia to the Yukon. From the Yukon, 26-mile bridge, they came here to the States, and they've been here migrating, and they're used to the coldness, okay? So now that it was hot, okay, they stay in the northern areas. Oh, they're going to go because they got acclimated to the heat. Now they're going to move down to the south. And is there areas, because they're so big? First of all, you got to understand something. There's only about 8,000 of these creatures in the United States of America. So think about that. There's not an abundance like we've got 350 million people. Get it? So and then they travel the waterways and through the canopies of nighttime with these long trees. The only time anybody ever gets to see them is, like Leo talked about, is when they get off onto a road or people are vacationing and they actually get to see these things. But that's a great question. It really is. Listen, I don't want to steal the thunder. I got to get back to, we're going to have a beautiful dinner right now commemorating these three birthdays. And I want to thank each and every one of you guys for listening in. And as I say, each and every week, kudos and salutations. Till next time, America.
Thanks.
Thank everybody. Thank everybody. I want to thank Father Ray. I want to thank my friend Paul and thank Miss Elizabeth. You were great, great, great witnesses on this show to bring out some true information. We're going to have you back on the show again, and we hope if you continue looking for this creature. Until next week, folks, this is Leo the Bigfoot Hunter on Searching for Bigfoot. And I want to say my famous line, Rocky, before I say goodnight, Marco Bill, who brought you?
Good night, everybody. Good night, Marco Bell.
Good night.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they die. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monster mission mysteries, legend, tales, and facts. Put them all together, reason for facts.